Okay, we need to give you a heads up because we want to take a look today at a topic, aspects of which are horrifying, but there is no other way to tell the story of the latest wave of methamphetamine reports. Methamphetamine has become the single biggest drug threat in parts of the country, including the Central Valley of California. And the latest headlines involve mothers who either kill or try to kill their children. In Fresno, California, 23-year-old Aida Mendez is accused of shooting her toddlers and a cousin, seriously wounding her husband. A Bakersfield, California mother was sentenced this month for stabbing her newborn. An Oklahoma woman, and this is the horrifying part, put her infant in a washing machine, killing her. Why is this happening? In the coming days, we're going to look at a new method of making the drug that has produced so many burn victims that burn units in some hospitals are closing down because they can't handle the load. But today, let's put meth addiction in context with Dr. Alex Stalkup. He's founder of the New Leaf Treatment Center in Lafayette, California. He's received some federal funding to do research into meth addiction. Dr. Stalkup, welcome.
Thank you.
And we remember a spate of reports of people using this drug and, you know, perhaps their face would become aged beyond their years. We heard of labs that make the drug blowing up and burning down homes. But why are mothers killing their children? What does this drug do to them?
I mean, simply put, those mothers are not in their right mind. The drug has taken them over, taken over their lives. If you look at the way that meth works on the brain, it is a drug that leads to violence very readily. At worst, some of them have used enough that they've actually developed a condition which is indistinguishable from paranoid schizophrenia. They are delusional, they hallucinate, and many of you have seen those scratch marks and dig marks on the skin of the arm and the face. That's a true hallucination, that bugs are crawling on the skin. And they also lose the ability to speak coherently. So they're very much in easily one of the most dramatically altered states of mind I've ever seen. And I've been working with people in altered states of consciousness for 30 years, and I've never seen anything like this.
Well, you work with heroin addicts, so you're saying this is far worse than that.
Far worse, in the sense that opiate addicts, when they're high, are docile. They're only dangerous when they're coming down and start to get sick. Meth inherently generates anger, irritability, and rage. And a big problem with most people who use meth, especially if they're smoking the drug, which concentrates the high, a big problem for those people is they can't sleep. Let me ask you a question, Robin. How are you after 7 or 8 days of no sleep, period?
Ask the people I work with. Not pleasant.
It's awful, and yet that's the norm. Even in the early days of meth smoking, people will be up for 2 or 3 days, then they'll crash for a day or two, and as you can imagine, when you're high or when you're crashing, you can't take care of your five-year-old.
Well, we understand the stimulant effect of methamphetamine is up to 50 times longer than cocaine. So as you said, people are staying awake for days on end. Paranoia sets in. I mean, that some of these mothers literally think that these infants are, you know, some part of a plot to get them.
It's crazy thinking. Their minds are racing 1,000 miles an hour. They're hypersensitive, hyperactive, and the least bit of stimulus can set them off. The thing that upsets me the most is that we really, really do have effective treatment for methamphetamine addiction. It's just not available.
What is it? What's the treatment?
The federal government funded 9 treatment sites around the United States to study how to treat methamphetamine addiction. And we can now report rates of 2 out of 3 people clean fully a year after treatment.
Wait a minute. That's an astonishing rate for any addict. You couldn't get that success rate with an alcoholic.
No, you couldn't. It's actually more treatable than most of the addictions. Addiction's a chronic disease. Getting 2 out of 3 clean a year after treatment is about as well as we do treating people with high blood pressure or high lipids. We have good treatment. Unfortunately, it's not available, and people are dying, and their families are in trouble, and they get crazy, and they hurt people.
So explain further. Why isn't it available? You say there are treatment centers around the country. Are they just not where the addicts are?
Well, I think part of it's a maldistribution of resources. Most drug treatment resources go to large urban areas. Methamphetamine, as in the state we're currently in is predominantly a rural drug epidemic.
Why is that? Because we mentioned the Valley in California. Why is that such a capital?
In the olden days, after World War II, meth came back with returning troops and quickly became the province of outlaw motorcycle gangs. Around 1980, a new cooking technique emerged, and it changed the way the drug can be used. The old-fashioned drug, crank, you could use it by snorting it, and you could use it by intravenous injection, but you couldn't smoke it. Now, when a drug becomes smokable, the high is concentrated dramatically.
Isn't that also where you get the huge danger of the fire and the burning and such?
Well, yeah, you got it right. You remember Richard Pryor blew his face off smoking cocaine. But the high is extraordinary. It's been compared by the many people I see every day to 10, 20, 30 orgasms going off in your head at the same time. However, that level of elation and euphoria is very dangerous because it injures the brain. It deafens the brain's ability to experience normal pleasure. And once you stop, you don't go back to normal. You go as low as you had been high. Let me tell you, from watching these folks, it's unimaginably bad. Now, the problem is that powerful a drug activates the fight or flight system of the body. So as the euphoria wears off, the user is left with the sensation that they're in great threat, and they begin to believe, in fact, that they are in danger, that people are following them. A man came in yesterday morning bringing in several sheets of license plate numbers because he believed he was being followed on the freeway by green vans. He pulled over and wrote the license number of all the green vans, brought it into me proudly to prove to me that, in fact, he was being followed. Well, I mean, obviously, that's a paranoid delusion. He believed it with all his heart.
We're talking with Dr. Alex Stalkup, founder of the New Leaf Treatment Center in Lafayette, California. Dr. Stalkup, you mentioned before the break that meth came to the U.S. with troops after World War II. It was picked up by motorcycle gangs. Now it's in the hands of farmhands in California and super labs that are controlled by Mexican drug trafficking organizations. But meth, which is made from, you know, other pharmacy drugs, has historically come over the border from Mexico.
Yeah, it was then and it is now, although a lot of the meth that's on the streets is homemade.
But we understand another appeal of these farmland areas is they're isolated. There's shacks, you know, out in isolated areas where people can either sell or make the drug. But also people in the area, it's just become so potent in the Central Valley that meth-related robberies are through the roof, people stealing manhole covers, agricultural plumbing, copper wiring, lawn sprinklers, things to sell to get money.
You got it right.
And by the way, we mentioned stealing manhole covers. I mean, there was a report of a woman who fell through a hole in the ground because somebody had stolen the manhole cover to sell. You can really feel this drug in your area.
It is. It's a menace. It's like a dark cloud. People get trapped in the drug life. And you actually raise a good point. Not only do people take desperate measures like stealing trivial things, turning them into dope, the main obstacle, and in fact the biggest obstacle to someone getting off of meth, they have to get away from the drug. So if you look at the small towns that are heavily, heavily impacted by methamphetamine, boy, it's hard to get away from your neighbors, church-going friends, people at the PTA. So in these little towns, the main thing that's necessary to get off meth is the hardest to achieve.
Well, and I would imagine this is particularly difficult if you're in a farming community and this
that's
is what you
point.
Do. Yeah,
that's my point.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you turn around, you see somebody out of their mind spun on meth, and it instantly triggers extreme hunger for the drug.
By the way, do I read that your phrase for this idea that, you know, you have to be in the area because that's where your work is, and so you're constantly subjected to the drug use, environmental cueing?
That's the problem. 50% of relapses to meth occur because the drug entered their environment. It also challenges the current practice of sending somebody to another county, another state to get treatment, It's all worthless if they return and encounter the drug. They'll relapse as soon as they're around the drug. This is built into the biology of methamphetamine. It creates drug hunger when it's around you.
Well, Dr. Stelkup, we talk about the treatment, the idea that treatment centers have been set up, but you say it's not enough, and this is so doubly tragic because the treatment works. What is the treatment?
The treatment involves, number one, getting away from the drug. Secondly, treating the horrible, horrible symptoms that arise when you initiate abstinence. Pitiful depression, levels of anxiety, insomnia. We treat those with medicine. Mm-hmm. We really try and calm them down and keep the agitation at a minimum. Many, many of these people will have an underlying mental illness, and even if they didn't, the drug will produce mental illness. That has to be treated. Because what a lot of patients experience is, okay, they fought the fight, they got sober, now they can't stop weeping, and they want to kill themselves. And they rush back to the drug because they simply can't stand how they feel.
So I just want to ask you, because a lot of this sounds familiar when we've talked about other addiction treatments, and I keep going back to alcohol. It sounds familiar, but then you've said that if you can get someone away from the environment, get this medication to help them, you know, detox, that you have this huge success rate, 2 out of 3. That's a huge.
It is. It's wonderful.
Huge. So are you saying that as devastating as methamphetamine is for the brain, it actually sounds as if you can change the environment, you have a better chance of becoming sober, if you will, than even alcoholics do?
Yes, they do. I mean, alcoholics can't be around alcohol either. But the potency of meth is such that they just are uniquely vulnerable to the presence of the drug in the environment. And that's a big problem in rural areas, as we said.
And as you said, perhaps uniquely able to succeed if you can get them out of the environment.
Or clean up the environment. And so we'll often, if a lady comes in and she's meth addicted, she's worried about how she's treating her kids, we'll bring the old man in who's also a user. If we can get them both to get some clean time, I mean, it really helps. It's sort of black or white. If one's using and the other one's sober, they'll both use. If one's sober and the other one stops using, they'll both progress to sobriety. Mm-hmm. It's a family disease.
This must break your heart, Dr. Stelkup.
It does. But, you know, at the same time it breaks my heart, you're talking to one of the most optimistic people around because I see people get well all the time. It isn't a slam dunk. It's so hard. They don't want to be drug addicts. They don't want to mistreat their children. They want to be healthy. They can't get any traction as long as someone's puffing on the pipe around them.
One last question. Just these stunning headlines that we started with, wrenching of mothers using methamphetamine and now accused of either trying to or succeeding in killing their infants. Is this new?
No, I mean, meth violence goes all the way back to when we first began seeing it in the 80s.
But I mean, is it new for so many women?
No. Unlike most drugs, which has about 2 men for every woman, this is an equal opportunity drug, and men and women use it equally. Many of them are parenting women. And in fact, in the early days of meth, it's all big party time. You know, you feel like you're the best mom in the world. As soon as you start to come down, you're hell on wheels. So put yourself in the frame of a 5-year-old. 1 minute, she's mother of the year, huggy kissy, she's high. As she starts to come down, right before the kid's eyes, she turns mean. She hurts the kid. She cusses the kid out. Kids can grow up in bad environments, but they can't grow up in environments that switch that quickly.
Dr. Alex Stelkup, founder of the New Leaf Treatment Center in Lafayette, California, talking to us about the methamphetamine problems that are being dealt with out there in California. Dr. Stelkup, thanks so much.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the chance to let people know about this.